Chapter 5. If you know the code, you choose the rules. Shattering the paradigm of false limits. In 2005, Amanda Dennison of Alberta, Canada was registered in the Guinness Book of Records for the longest documented firewalk in history. While countless individuals have used firewalks as a confidence-building tool, what made Amanda's walk so different was how long she held the focus that allowed her to accomplish her goal. On the day of her walk, she strolled through a bed of glowing coals that averaged 1,700 degrees Fahrenheit, and she did so for a distance of 225 feet to become the first person in history to set such a record and do so without injury. There have been theories offered in the past to explain how people have been able to walk uninjured on burning coals covering much shorter distances. It may include factors such as how fast the walker moves, and the possibility that a thin film of perspiration on the walker's feet insulates them from the glowing coals. Those theories simply don't hold up in the presence of the extreme temperatures and over 200 feet of coals in Amanda's case. So what happened to Amanda? What was it that set her apart from the people surrounding her on that summer day in 2005 and allowed her to perform such a feat? Or maybe the bigger question is what happens to anyone who does something so seemingly miraculous? How many times have we heard of people doing things that seem to violate the common sense of everyday reality, demonstrating a superhuman strength that they've never had before, and even breaking the laws of physics and nature, at least the way we understand those laws today? In the summer of 2005, for example, BBC News carried the report of a woman who lifted over 20 times her own body weight to free a friend who was trapped beneath her car following an accident. And she did so even though she was injured herself. The woman, 5'7", 23-year-old Kyla Smith, lost control of her car, and it rolled over as it wandered off the road. When her car came to a rest, she could see that her friend's leg was pinned beneath the vehicle. She pulled herself out of the driver's window and then lifted the car 6 to 7 inches from the ground to free her friend. "I just knew I had to get him free," she said, following the accident, and there was no one else around at the time. While these events don't happen every day, the point is that they do happen. And if they happen for one person or a dozen people, then they may be the sign of something that is available to all of us. The key appears to be that we live our lives based on what we believe about our capabilities and our limits, such as the belief that a car is too heavy for us to lift. It's only when something happens that changes us, something like another person depending on us for their life, that we bypass our beliefs and we perform miracles. Belief Code 24 clarifies why this is so important. It reminds us that a miracle that's possible for anyone is possible for everyone. We owe it to ourselves to discover what changes within people that do miraculous acts, like lifting cars to free others, or to accomplish things that reasoning says they can't. What is it about the way they think of themselves that makes them different from those who believe otherwise? Perhaps most importantly, how did the change in what they believed inside of themselves translate to a change in what they became capable of doing in the world? To answer these seemingly innocent questions is to unlock what is perhaps the greatest secret of our existence. And to do so is to walk squarely into the fuzzy realm that has been the battleground of philosophers and religions for centuries and is now considered the last frontier of science. It's the mystery of consciousness and reality. The crux of the mystery, for both scientists and philosophers, is that our everyday world does not appear to be the real world. Rather, we are living what is described as an illusion, what the ancients called a shadow reality, that is the reflection of something even more real than our everyday reality. The common thread that runs through each of these ideas is that the actual reality isn't here. It isn't even close to here. While our bodies are certainly in this world, the living force that expresses through our bodies is actually based somewhere else, in a larger reality that we just can't see from our vantage point. Well, historically, science has tended to discount such comparisons as stories created by non-scientific people to explain the things they either don't understand or simply don't have any other explanations for. That is until recently. Now, the existence of higher dimensions, the growing possibility that our world is a simulation, and the notion that consciousness is the stuff everything is made of is where the scientific conversations begin. Whether we're looking at things from the perspective of science or spirituality, it still comes down to the same timeless question. Just how real is our reality? How real is real? When he was asked about his belief in reality, Albert Einstein often sounded more like a philosopher than a scientist in his reply. He's commonly quoted as stating that reality is merely an illusion, albeit a very persistent one, showing us that he suspected our everyday world may not be as certain as we'd like to think it is. In an address to the Prussian Academy of Sciences on January 27, 1921, he clarified his view of reality from the perspective of a scientist. As far as the laws of mathematics refer to reality, he began, they are not certain, suggesting that we still don't know all there is to know about how the world works. He continued, stating that as far as the laws of mathematics are certain, they do not refer to reality. What a powerful and honest assessment of where we are in understanding the universe and our existence. In words that are simple and direct, the same mind that discovered how to release the energy of an atom as E equals mc squared was telling us that the explanation of how the universe works is still up for grabs. One of the central keys of ancient Mahayana Buddhist tradition is that there are no external objects in our reality. In other words, all that exists is pure consciousness, nothing more and nothing less. Continuing, the traditions state that within the consciousness of all that is, both the world of form and the formless result from a special kind of consciousness that is called subjective imagination. So while any experience certainly seems real enough to us, the teachings state that it's only where we focus our attention while we're having a feeling about the object of our focus that a possible reality becomes a real experience. In other words, what we experience as everyday reality is a form of collective dream. Well, except for a slight variation in the language, this ancient tradition sounds a lot like the emerging theories of a virtual reality. In both the old and new ways of thinking, we are intimately woven into the fabric of reality itself. In both, it's through our interaction while we're in the dream that the possibilities of our minds become the reality of our world from both perspectives, rather than thinking of us as outsiders, mysteriously dropped into the experience of our earth reality, these traditions suggest that we're inseparable from that reality. We get an idea of just how deep the interconnectedness between us and reality really goes if we think of a similar connection between a drop of water and the ocean where it's found. While it may be possible to separate the two under certain conditions, it's generally difficult to know where the droplet ends and where the ocean begins, for all intents and purposes. Just as the ocean and the droplet are one and the same, we are part of the reality that we are creating. What makes virtual reality and dreamtime ideas so appealing are the unmistakable similarities between what they say about the way our world works. As mentioned in Chapter 1, for example, John Wheeler suggests that we play not only a role in reality, but we play a prime role in what he calls a participatory universe. And as participants, the act of focusing our consciousness, of us looking somewhere and examining the world, is an act of creation in and of itself. We are the ones looking, we are the ones who are examining our world, and everywhere we look, our consciousness makes something for us to perceive. Belief Code 25 summarizes this powerful relationship, stating that in a participatory reality, we are creating our experience as well as experiencing what we've created. As both creators and experiencers, the question that begs to be asked is this: if our interaction with the universe is constantly creating and modifying our world, then how do we know what interactions create what kind of effects? What are the rules that describe how our reality works, and do we have the wisdom to recognize them when we see them? Or is it possible that we've already found them? Could the laws of physics be showing us the ins and outs of how this reality works? If so, then as scientists solve the mysteries of nature, they're also showing us the spiritual keys to our own empowerment. To do so successfully, however, means that we must account for everything that we see as the rules are tested. And this includes the anomalies, that is, the things that don't always fit what the theories predict. As we often find, it's actually the anomalies that show us the subtle keys describing the way things really work. And this brings us to precisely where we find ourselves today. Does the world change because we're looking? Over the last 300 years, scientists have proposed, tested, and updated their explanations of the universe and how things like gravity and light work. The problem is that all of the effort has led to a place where we now have two different sets of rules to describe what we see in different parts of the same reality, classical physics and quantum physics. And each set of rules has its own theories to support it. The great challenge that remains is to marry these two very different ways of thinking into a single view of the universe, a unified theory. And to do so requires the existence of something that connects the very large and the very small in ways that we're only beginning to understand. And that something has remained a mystery, even though we may have seen it early in the last century. While the idea that our beliefs and everyday reality are intimately connected is an old one, the scientific proof of the connection emerged suddenly with a single experiment performed on one day in 1909. The demonstration itself was simple. Thinking that led to the experiment is visionary, and the results are so profound that we're still talking about them today. In his laboratory in England, physicist Geoffrey Ingram Taylor's demonstration began as he found a way to shoot the stuff that atoms are made of, quantum particles of light called photons, from a projector to a target a short distance away. Here's the key. Before the photons could reach the target, they had to pass through a barrier that had two openings. Just as water is able to pass through many holes in the window screen when it thaws from ice to liquid, Taylor's experiment showed that photons did something very similar. To the scientists' amazement, the photons changed from the particle form that could pass through only one opening at a time in the barrier, the single slit, to a wave that could pass through multiple openings in the same barrier, the double slits. Well, the reason that this is so mind-boggling is because there is absolutely nothing in conventional physics to account for why the stuff that everything's made of can change the very nature of its existence. To explain what they found, a new kind of physics had to be devised, quantum physics. The two questions that Taylor and the scientists had to ask were first, how did the particles know that there was more than one opening in the barrier? And secondly, what caused the particles to change into waves just to accommodate the situation? To answer these questions, they had to ask yet another, even more revealing one, who knew that there was more than one opening in the barrier? Well, the answer is obvious. Only those present in the room knew about the precise conditions of the experiment, the scientists. The implication of this answer is where our ideas of reality are tested. Could the knowing of the scientists have had an effect upon the experiment? Was it possible that the consciousness of the observers in the room, in other words, the belief and the expectation that the particles would behave in one way or another, somehow become part of the experiment itself? And if so, what does that mean for us? If the scientists' beliefs affected the photons in the experiment, then do our beliefs do the same thing in everyday life? Well, this possibility opened the door to something that was almost unthinkable at the time, and the implications get very personal very quickly. In the language of science, they suggest precisely what our most ancient and cherished spiritual traditions have stated is at the crux of our existence. And that is that the quality of our beliefs and expectations have a direct and powerful effect upon what happens in our everyday life. Belief Code 26 summarizes the experiment, describing additional studies conducted in 1998 that confirm that photons are influenced just by being watched, and that the greater the watching, the greater the watcher's influence on how those particles behave. Well, these experiments are important to our everyday lives because of the following undeniable facts. Our bodies and the world are made of the same quantum stuff that changed in the experiments when it was watched. And secondly, we are all watchers. This means that the way we see the world and what we believe about what we see can no longer be discounted or written off as being of no consequence. In fact, The experiment suggests that consciousness itself is what the entire universe is made of, and that consciousness may just be the missing link in the theories that would unify our classical and quantum physics. John Wheeler leaves little doubt of what the new experiments mean to him, stating, "We cannot imagine a universe without observers, because it's the acts of observation that are the building blocks of the universe itself."